University of Colorado.
Thank you for joining us for CU on the Air, University of Colorado's podcast. At CU on the Air, we talk to our outstanding faculty about their life-changing research and how it benefits our state, nation, and world. I'm your host, Ken McConnellog. We're pleased to be able to bring you the best of all four CU campuses on CU on the Air.
It was really surprising to me how big a change it is. We really are, we're asking why at every step. Why do we do things this way or another way? The campus has a large set of processes that make complete sense for the traditional way of running a program, but make no sense for this.
We have students in University of Colorado MOOCs from 192 different countries.
This fall, the University of Colorado will launch a new and innovative master's degree in electrical engineering, the first of its type in the world to be offered entirely through a massive open online course, or MOOC. MOOCs, or college courses or programs, delivered online to tens of thousands of students at a time. Almost all are free and not for credit, until now. CU's 91 MOOCs have attracted 1.9 million learners since 2014. Today on CU on the Air, we're talking with CU Boulder Professor Robert Erickson about what this revolutionary MOOC has to offer to learners across the globe, as well as how it is making us rethink how people learn. Your MOOC is setting the University of Colorado off on a big adventure and a new direction. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is a really, I think, exciting and pretty revolutionary change to the way we teach our four-credit courses. The whole MOOC experience in the past has been non-credit generally, although there are some early experiments at other universities in offering credit. But what we are really attempting to do is to be the first electrical engineering Master of Science degree that is offered completely through MOOCs as asynchronous courses, meaning they're not synchronized to the campus semester system. We are offering these to distance professionals, so generally they're non-traditional people who have jobs and lives and don't or can't come to campus. They have their own schedule, and so they need a flexible schedule that does not revolve around the semester system. These courses are really geared towards convenience and making it much easier for professionals to get through a four-credit program. We're offering these courses both non-credit and four-credit, and we feel that even though they're MOOC delivery, they're offered at the same high level as a regular on-campus graduate class in electrical engineering. When the program is fully built out in a year, we're going to have about 100 credit hours of material offered in this way. So it takes 30 credit hours to get a master's degree. Students will be able to get a full master's degree, or if they want something less, they can get a graduate school certificate that's about 10 credit hours, or they can just take individual classes or even non-credit short courses from this material.
The program is competency-based, so you really don't need an undergraduate degree in engineering or an undergraduate degree at all. You just have to demonstrate that you can do the work.
Well, that's right. It's completely proficiency-based, and there is no formal application process. Students merely need to demonstrate that they can get through basically a semester's worth of material with at least a B average, and indicate that they want admission to the master's program, and they're admitted. Now, of course, they have to be able to handle the material, and the prerequisites are we assume that students understand an undergraduate electrical engineering or have a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering, but it's not required.
So what will the experience be like for the students as compared with students in, say, the traditional campus-based program?
Students will listen to lectures that are pre-recorded. They're very short and tight lectures on a single subject that are typically 5 to 10 minutes long, so they're not tied to the traditional hour-long campus schedule. They do graded assignments that are machine graded and automatic. When I first started this project, I was concerned with the level of assignments that could be given and whether they were up to the level of what we expect normally in a graduate engineering course. And I certainly wasn't interested in putting up a series of multiple choice questions in my course. But it turns out that the technology of MOOCs has really progressed, and we can put up good questions that have their formula grading and other kinds of grading that are equal to the level of on-campus assignments. And it's actually better because the students get immediate feedback on what they did right and what they did wrong, and typically they'll keep trying until they get it. As opposed to the on-campus experience where students turn in their homework on Friday, the TA spends a week to grade it, they get it back the following week, they got an 82 out of 100, and that's the end of it. So it's really a much better experience to get this have this automatic grading.
So presumably the retention is higher.
Yeah, the key point with this delivery method is that we give the courses in smaller chunks. We aren't tied to the semester system. A typical course is maybe a month long, and several of those are put together to deliver the equivalent of a semester-long course. But say a working professional can go take a month-long course, be done with that part of it, and then when they're ready to take the next one, then they can start the next one and go at their own pace.
And this degree program has been positioned as unique, the only one of its kind. Why is that?
So first of all, it's the first electrical engineering master's degree, as far as I'm aware, to be delivered this way. But even the degrees in other areas typically are funnels that bring the students to campus. So the students may start out taking MOOC courses, but at some point they switch to an on-campus set of courses in order to finish their degrees, which still is not convenient for working professionals or international people.
The program will start in the fall?
Fall of 2018. We will have about two-thirds of the courses up by then, and the last third will be up within a year of the launch.
Yeah. And you're going into uncharted territory. What do you expect out of this?
So, of course, we really have no idea. We have hopes. Certainly, it's interesting that the original free MOOCs that I ran twice had a total of about 100,000 people around the world who signed up. That was a free version. We will now have non-credit and for-credit that obviously are going to cost more, but there's a huge amount of interest. I think I've had about 5,000 people complete my course now, and so there is the potential for many thousands of people to enroll.
It's obviously a change in how you deliver, but it also has substantial ripple effects across the campus and in many different departments.
It was really surprising to me how big a change it is. We really we're asking why at every step. Why do we do things this way or another way? The campus has a large set of processes that make complete sense for the traditional way of running a program, but make no sense for this. So we are asynchronous, or not synchronized to the semester. We have performance-based admissions. We're breaking our courses up into small chunks that are a month long instead of a semester long. So our credit hour system is different. The registrar will record courses differently. The bursar is going to collect tuition, but it will be done hopefully in an integrated way with the delivery platform. So it really requires a rethinking of how we run the entire degree program, both in the administrative side and in the academic side of the rules. Why do we have the current set of rules with our graduate school that are based on the semester system? And when you have an asynchronous course, really a lot of those rules don't make sense. So we're rethinking those as well.
What's the most notable change in how you teach?
I've been teaching the same courses for 35 years, and after you've taught the class that many times, you think, well, the best time I ever gave that lecture was back in 2007. Here, this is an opportunity to put a really polished set of lectures up and preserve them. So that's a nice thing to do. A second big change is understanding how to write good homework questions that are machine graded. It's simply a different set of constraints versus what can be done on campus. It's not necessarily that it's not as good, but it is different. And you have to think differently about how to write high quality questions that are machine graded. The discussion forums are a very important part of these courses. The discussion forums in a good class are populated by students around the clock, around the world. And the instructors have to learn how to handle those. It's important to make an appearance in them without taking over the discussion.
It's interesting because it seems like a lot of the discussion about electronic delivery, online delivery, has been concerns about losing that interaction and experience, but it sounds like what you're saying is the opposite.
Exactly. The instructor may have to encourage the students to participate in the forums and make sure they work, but it really makes it a vibrant and great class.
We said that people don't need prerequisites or even an engineering undergraduate degree, but certainly they have to have a high level of expertise to take this course. Who do you expect your students will be?
I think that for the most part, they are practicing engineers or people who want to be engineers. They generally are highly motivated. They're more mature because they're farther along in life and they know why they're taking this class. And so they are very self-motivated in general.
In a discipline like engineering, it seems that it would lend itself to this particular delivery method. Do you see it expanding beyond the sciences?
Yes, I think so. There have been quite a few instances of successful business courses. There have been a lot of experiments in other areas, you know, the more traditional, say, English or history. I'm less sure how that would work, where you have high instructor touch and one-on-one experiences or small group experiences. The format of the engineering courses I have led doesn't work, but there have been examples where people use the discussion forums and they use crowd or peer grading with well-defined rubrics that can work in these other areas.
The Master's in Engineering is a bold step in the evolution of online learning, yet the University of Colorado has been using MOOCs for the past several years. We're chatting now with Michael Leitner, CU's Vice President for Academic Affairs, about the university's involvement in MOOCs and online learning. We hear a lot about MOOCs, but I think a portion of our audience doesn't know what a MOOC is. Would you explain?
Sure. A MOOC is a name that was coined by a Canadian academic, and it's an acronym for Massive Open Online Course. And it's meant to be offered to tens of thousands of people at the same time. So massive is not 100 students, it's tens of thousands of students. The initial idea was it was going to be open, no charge. This has evolved over time. And then obviously it's online.
And MOOCs are a pretty widespread thing now.
In this country, there are two major providers of MOOCs, Coursera, which is a for-profit spin-out of Stanford, and a not-for-profit called edX, which is a spin-out of MIT and Harvard. There are MOOC offerers in Europe. One of them is called FutureLearn. And there are others around the country but based in the world, but primarily Coursera and edX are the players in the field.
And how did the University of Colorado get involved in MOOCs?
In 2012, when Coursera was first coming to everybody's attention, I was very interested in seeing if CU could have courses on Coursera, if we could partner with them in some way. The challenge, of course, is that we're four campuses. At that time, I was on the Boulder campus. Problem? Coursera was looking for Research One institutions. So they were looking at Boulder, but we were concerned about how this would work overall across the system. So in late October of 2012, there was a breakfast meeting between President Benson, then Vice President Kathleen Ballard, Daphne Koller, co-founder of Coursera, and myself. And at that meeting, it was decided we needed to do more work in terms of the other campuses in our system, but the president was fine with Boulder moving forward. So I took that permission and went back to the Boulder campus and worked to get the campus leadership to agree that we could pilot some MOOC courses on the Boulder campus. At the same time, Vice President Kathleen Ballard was working with Daphne Koller to try to convince her there was a way that we could work as a system with the other three campuses partnering with Coursera. So we got initial permission and a contract with Coursera for the Boulder campus, and shortly thereafter, and this was quite unusual and quite an accomplishment on Vice President Ballard's part, the other campuses of the CU system were allowed to offer MOOC courses through Coursera.
And have other institutions gone to that model, or is University of Colorado the only one?
There may be some others, but we're pretty much standalone in terms of being able to bring all of the campuses in a system into Coursera. The work that we talked about that Vice President Ballard did in forming the relationship between the CU system and Coursera led to the formation of an office in academic affairs at the system level called the Office of Digital Engagement and Education. This office is run by Dr. Deb Keek-Franson, and she has been really the point person in driving all the MOOC development on the campuses other than the Boulder campus.
And what's the extent of the university's involvement? How many courses? What kind of specializations? Where are we at right now?
We have 90 courses that we're offering through Coursera across all four campuses. That encompasses almost 2 million learners who have signed on, not necessarily completed the program, but basically gone to the extent of signing up. We have programs from all the campuses. They vary dramatically, and it's very interesting to see the differences. One of the early courses out of Colorado Springs campus was on game programming. An early course from our Anschutz campus was on global health responders and how to work in the environments around the world as a first responder, if you will. For the Denver campus, there was a very early and popular MOOC on data warehousing for business intelligence, obviously a timely topic. And the Boulder campus had a very different course on comic books and how the role that comic books play in popular culture from an academic perspective.
How do learners benefit from the MOOC approach?
It's a great question, and it's one that is brought up by both faculty members and students as well as our constituents and alumni. What does this mean relative to the experience they've had in a classroom? Why is it good? Why is it different? And to what end? And I'd say there's a few things. The first is that the experience of working with others, which is what we find very valuable in a course, is amplified in a MOOC. That massive portion of the MOOC name really can be tens of thousands of people in a social media setting interacting with one another on questions associated with the course, homework problems, also doing peer grading. And we know that as you try to teach someone and support them, you really learn the material. At the same time, the students can participate at any time that's convenient for them. There is not one time that they have to be online to see the material or to participate with the other students in the course. And that's why MOOCs are offered in countries around the world. We have students in University of Colorado MOOCs from 192 different countries. The other element that is really critical in the MOOC approach as opposed to a normal classroom approach is the way the subject material is segmented. You probably have a great attention span, but you know, sometimes 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
What did you just say?
Exactly. That's my point. Sometimes we just can't stay with the material more than 10 or 15 minutes, but a lecture topic may drone on, if I can be negative there, for 50 minutes with no break. That is not at all the model used in a MOOC, no matter the provider. So the material is broken into chunks, sometimes 5 minutes, sometimes 15 minutes. Following any chunk, there are a series of exercises where the students can answer questions online, and if they don't have the answer right, they can't move ahead in the course. So they have to go back, review the material. So it's a process that keeps the students up to speed on the topic as they go through, but allows them to repeat it as many times as they want. It's like you were given a quiz in class, you didn't do well. Guess what? You can take it as many times as you want until you get it right. That combined with the idea of simulations, videos, a number of different ways of the students interacting with the material gives you a very rich setting for learning that in many ways outstrips what you can do in a classroom.
You talked about how MOOCs benefit learners, but with the notable exception of the electrical engineering MOOC that we're talking with Dr. Erickson about, how does it benefit the university if it's not credit offering or revenue generating?
So a great question. If it's not a degree, what can you provide the learner? When they have actually gone through all of these assessments and they've completed one of these specializations? And the answer turns out to be certificates. And there are two types of certificates that historically developed in Coursera, and these precede any ideas of credit. So one is simply a certificate saying you completed this, you've gone through all the material. Another one is that you have done further assessments and you actually get from the University of Colorado a certificate. And these can be placed on LinkedIn pages, on your profiles, in whatever social media setting you wish. They are recognized more and more by employers, so as a type of professional development. But more important than that, perhaps, because you asked about CU and why we would do it, not just the learners, I would ask you, as you know, the top media professional for the university, what it would take for us to put ads in 192 different countries.
More than we have budget for now.
Exactly. And so through the MOOC process, we have a chance to be seen and known in a variety of different settings. That is, students who are in school now, and this is supplementing their education, students who have graduated and they're working, and this is a professional development tool, individuals who are working and this is a means for them to change careers, and this is happening across the globe. This is a tremendous benefit to CU's reputation.
Another exciting development is that the university is teaming up this summer for a MOOC offered by celebrated scientist Jane Goodall. How will this collaboration advance the university and benefit learners?
So I had a chance to be in an audience where Jane Goodall was a speaker. This was in an international conference in Dubai. Her story and her ability to engage anybody in the hall, and so this is our learners, in the challenges that the planet faces in her areas of concern is remarkable. She's an amazing individual. Having her, if you allow me to use this media term, co-brand with the University of Colorado is remarkable. We're exceptionally proud of our Nobel Prize winners, and of course, that's marvelous. Jane Goodall probably has more name recognition than any of our Nobel Prize winners as you go around the world. So having her as part of our community is incredibly valuable.
MOOCs have come a long way at this university and in general since 2014 when we first got in the game. I'd ask you to look around the corner and speculate on what might be next on the horizon.
We've learned from MOOCs that individuals, learners we'll call them, can do well in situations where they have peer grading and peer support. Not two peers necessarily, but maybe hundreds of peers. We've learned that asynchronous engagement in the material is really valuable for the students. We've learned that breaking material into smaller chunks and having more frequent assessments so that students can tell do they have it or not, and they can go back so they don't reach a midterm exam and realize they didn't understand things in the second week. All of these are affecting our pedagogy, and it will affect the pedagogy in the online courses that CU offers, but it also is affecting the pedagogy in our face-to-face classes. More active learning, more lectures that are broken up into participatory segments, and more frequent assessments, materials that could be online supporting face-to-face classes. I would take it one step further if I could, because this is something that is a piece of the MOOC world, but it's still really in a research phase because it's too costly to do at this point for a number of topics. And that's to engage the learner using AI tools. So it's not just saying, gee, Mike, you took this assessment and you didn't score high enough to pass, so go back and relook at the material and try it again. It's looking at what I got wrong and the history of what I've gotten wrong and giving me things that are different to read, different exercises to do that will get me more efficiently and effectively to a high level of understanding. That's the golden egg, if you will. That's going to come out of these activities, and that will drive really incredible changes over the next 20 to 25 years in universities as well as in K-12.
Do you see this as causing a fundamental shift in the business of the university, where students come to a campus and spend 3, 4, 5, 6 years and move on?
I think what we're going to see is more efficiency and more effectiveness in the learning that allows us to concentrate on the experiential piece involving the cohorts of students and working across cohorts in bringing that value of face-to-face even more to the fore in the on-campus setting.
Back to Professor Erickson. As you head into launching this fall, is it more exciting or nerve-wracking?
I'm excited. I'm pretty far along in my career, and I think this is a fun project. I hope it budges the needle on how we operate higher education, and addressing the distance education market in a much better way, to me, is a pretty exciting thing.
You know, to piggyback on that, there seems to be a notion that distance education, online education, can substantially lower the cost of a college education, but there are a whole host of things that come along with this different delivery method. What could be the implications for the cost of a program such as yours?
So we're going to offer this degree at about half the cost of our conventional on-campus master's degree. So it'll be about $20,000 tuition total to get a master's degree. But there are also non-credit options that are much cheaper than that. A month-long course that has no credit associated may cost $79, but it will be taught at the same high level as the course that we give full credit for.
How did a group of faculty get together one day and decide we're going to head in this direction?
So this was a pretty close collaboration between the Electrical Engineering Department and the Provost's Office. The program originated in the department, and the department faculty voted to do it, but there's been a lot of connection with the provost's office. So the vice provost, William Kuskin, who leads the Office of Strategic Initiatives, and I have worked very closely together on this in looking at ways to use MOOCs and eventually deciding this was a good thing to do. And some of his team as well, Quentin McAndrew and Chris Haynes, have been heavily involved. And within the department, the last department chair and the current department chair and our executive committee, there's been a lot of colleagues who have gotten on board and gotten pretty excited about it.
Have you been surprised by how it proceeded to this point?
Yes, I feel fortunate that I'm in a department where the majority of the faculty voted in favor of this. It is a pretty radical departure from how we do things in the department, and there are a lot of implications for how the department works. The department, though, couldn't have done it on its own. It's taken support at the college level from our dean and at the campus level from our graduate school and all of our administration, who were all highly supportive and willing to think outside the box.
We've been talking today with Professor Robert Erickson of the CU Boulder Department of Electrical, Computer, and Energy Engineering. and Michael Leitner, Vice President of Academic Affairs at the CU System, about the exciting evolution of MOOCs and online learning. Thank you for joining us for CU on the Air. The University of Colorado comprises four campuses: Boulder, Colorado Springs, Denver, and the CU Anschutz Medical Campus in Aurora. To learn more about CU, go to www.cu.edu. Thanks to our producer, Kathy Buten, and audio engineer, John Arnold. I'm Ken McConnellog, and we'll see you on the air next month.
University of Colorado.